Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. This is a live radio program, and we thank you for listening to AFR. I'm Tim with Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Walker Wildman.
Good morning.
And Fred Jackson. How are you, sir?
Howdy, howdy. Great to be here.
All right, Brother Ray Pritchard's still under the influence of the dentist, as I understand it. He told us so. He'll be back Tuesday, but pray for Brother Ray. He has to do a lot. Ray does a lot of speaking.
Yes.
He travels.
Well, used to.
Well, yeah. He does a lot of Zoom speaking now, as I understand it. He'll be with us next Tuesday, hopefully. But pray for Brother Ray. Great man of God. And
absolutely.
Go to his website, keepbelieving.com, keepbelieving.com. Jan Markell will be with us at the bottom of the hour. Brad Dacus, president of the Pacific Justice Institute, will be with us.
Wait till you hear the case we're going to discuss with Brad Dacus.
Yeah, he's.
If you don't think churches are in danger,
yeah.
Wait till you hear this, folks.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So we look forward to all these topics and interviews that we're going to cover. Walker, folks want to join us on that there internet, how can they do that?
Yes, they can go to our website, afr.net. afr.net is our website. But you can also follow us on social media, so check out our YouTube or Facebook page, And lastly, download the AFR app. Today's Issues is slowly climbing to the top of the podcast ratings.
You think we'll get there?
I think we will.
Who are we taking down next?
Well, we've got to get past Abraham Hamilton III. We've got to get past Brian Fisher.
Okay.
And we have to...
Then we climb to the top.
And Sandy D.
There's Sandy Rios waiting on us.
That's right. We're number four, so we've got to get past those three.
I have a solution. We offer a car.
You know what? Sometimes it takes incentive. Or
that's right.
Otherwise known as quid pro quos.
Yeah.
Also, I think if we start to undermine those other three on the air.
Right. Subtly. Maybe. I think subtly.
Unplug their mics or something.
Well, it would be unchristian just to directly, but we can just drop lines like you won't find that on any of the other AFR shows. You'll only find it here. And that way we're not, you know, it doesn't sound personal.
Yeah, we're not calling them out in particular.
Out. Yeah. So, yeah. No, Brian, Sandy, Abe, rest of our lineup. A lot of the podcast, also the numbers depend on how long you've been on the air with us.
Right.
That helps, too. You build a listening audience. But we got some great hosts on American
Family. Yeah, we're very grateful to God.
Don't we?
For a great lineup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, Fred.
All right. Back 2012, then President Barack Obama became somewhat frustrated that he couldn't get the immigration reform that he wanted. So he created an executive order which became known as DACA. It stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program. Basically what it was, these were young people, kids, who came across the border illegally with their parents. They now number anywhere 700,000, 800,000 in the country. So the DACA program, President Trump comes into office and he wants to end the DACA program. It's an executive, a presidential executive order, not a law, an executive order. And so those opposed to the president, President Trump ending the program, went to court. And today the United States Supreme Court ruled by a 5-4 ruling that the president at this point, very important, at this point cannot end that program. Now, Chief Justice John Roberts, writing for the majority, said this, and this is very careful, we do not decide whether DACA or its recession are sound policies. We address only whether the agency complied with the procedural requirement that it provide a reasoned explanation for its action. Here, the agency failed to consider the conspicuous issues of whether to retain forbearance and what, if anything, to do about the hardship to DACA recipients, end quote. So I think what the Chief Justice was saying, ending DACA could hurt a lot of people. We're not satisfied that you've thought this through. Go back, give you 90 days to rethink this, and then come back and make another application.
So what's DACA short for?
Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals
program.
My understanding is here's the issue. You have all these children coming with their parents. They come illegally. They grow up here. Mm. They basically become functioning parts of American society. So now the question is, what do you do with them? Many of them don't speak Spanish even. Yep. You know, they speak English. Can you just send them back to Mexico or wherever they came from? So my understanding from this Supreme Court ruling is that all the questions about whether President Trump can just simply get rid of DACA, it has to do with, did he adequately consider the what would happen to just uproot people who grew up here and send them to a country where they're
you
not.
You know what? Excuse me.
No, I was going to say that. That's
a couple thoughts here on this. That's why I'm here, right?
Yes, a couple thoughts.
To share.
Right. Huh? Just remember, we're competing.
And then our listeners are
competing
can,
with
and Walker
shows.
Wants to talk here at some point. Yeah. But all right. So this is not settled ultimately yet by the Supreme Court. It may come back up again. And this is a layman's view of this situation. Obviously, I'm not an attorney, a constitutional attorney like Abe. Would be interested to know what he thinks about this. Number one, this was an executive order, not a law. That's number one. So I think if a president has the right to enact an executive order like President Obama did, which was really just outright legislation,
right?
Deferring, I don't know if you call it deportation, but deferred what?
Well, action. So what President Obama's, what DACA did was we're postponing making a decision on what to do with these young, these children.
They're not children. Okay, yes. And by the way, I don't know, did they ever define what ages were included in that? Because you could have, you said hundreds of thousands, I would say probably millions.
Yeah, this is legal muddy water, to put it mildly. No one knows how they got here. Did they come when they were 25 or when they were 5? There's no documentation.
That's what I'm saying.
Nobody knows. This is a blanket protection for anyone who is here illegally, no matter how they got here, because you can always say, well, my grandmother brought me 20 years ago.
Right.
And I'm 35 years old.
Right.
There's no way to, who's going to go investigate that?
Right.
So
show me your birth certificate.
Yeah, this is de facto amnesty, is what it is. So, but the problem is that there's this theory out there that if President Trump rescinds this, then all of a sudden, then we're rounding up the buses and we're going to send 10 million back. That's not true. That wasn't happening before. What you do by rescinding DACA is you give law enforcement and ICE the actual option. Should you catch a 30-year-old drug dealer that's here illegally, it gives you the option to send him back, no matter if he says, I came here as a child or whatever.
Gotcha.
So it gives law enforcement more options, but you have DACA, then ICE kind of has their hands tied sometimes.
Good points, Walker. And I wanted to, my point is an executive order, if one president can invoke if that's the right word, establish a executive order, then to me, the next president can rescind said executive order, and it shouldn't involve the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court of our land has got into psychology and sociology.
Right.
On a lot of their decisions, they get into, well, what effect might this have on the feelings of people? If you read this stuff, and that's a growing trend, it seems to me, inside the Supreme Court. Not, is this legal or illegal, constitutional or unconstitutional? It's like, yeah, but what if you do this? This might happen, and you need to prove to us that you know, it just gets into psychobabble to me. A lot of it, reading this, but so this is not ultimately solved yet.
No.
Now, On the issue, I don't want to get into that. I've already expressed my opinion on DACA itself, children being brought here.
The dissenting four judges said this was illegal from the beginning, the executive order. The president didn't have a right,
He didn't.
To create
immigration law.
Number two, in advance of the Supreme Court making this decision this morning, earlier today, Texas Republican Senator John Cornyn let it be known that, hey, even if the Supreme Court rules in Trump's favor, we're not going to be sending up thousands of kids back to the back
no,
to Mexico.
No, nobody's going to do that.
We're never going to do that.
That's the fear-mongering that they want to push.
Yes.
But the question before the court is was the rescission legal?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if the original executive order, to your point, was legal, then naturally a rescission is legal.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not to mention that President Obama had no authority, even executive authority, to start now dictating immigration law.
No, and he knew that.
It's clearly up to Congress.
No, President Obama knew that because he resisted doing it. He even wrote, I'm not a dictator. I'm not a king. I can't do this.
Do it, right.
He wrote that to one of the Hispanic organizations who were promoting amnesty. He said, I can't just do this by myself. You know, this is a legislative matter.
That's what I said yesterday.
But he did. He ended up doing it with DACA.
Yeah. Yesterday, that so much that happens in Washington, D.C. is beyond the Constitution. And that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
We're complaining about what the Supreme Court ruled on Monday. Well, all this stuff that we're talking about that goes on in D.C. is just beyond the constitutional pale. So when the Supreme Court makes a ruling like this, you go, well, how can they do that? Well, how could President Obama do what he did? Nobody complained about that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or people did, but nothing was done with it.
Yeah.
All right, but this question is not ultimately solved. The Supreme Court said, are resolved. They said they said to the Trump administration, go back and do this a different way, and we'll hear it later, perhaps. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Next topic, Fred.
Dateline Atlanta, Georgia. Yesterday, the district attorney for Fulton County, Paul Howard, had a news conference. The networks covered it, and he announced that 27-year-old police officer Garrett Rolfe is now facing 11 charges, including felony murder, in the death of Rayshard Brooks. Now, I think most people have seen the video from last weekend at a Wendy's there in Atlanta. Rayshard Brooks shows up in his car, gets in the lineup for the drive-through, and falls asleep. The manager of the Wendy's calls the police. The police arrive, two police officers, including Garrett Rolfe, and they find the man asleep. And they find out during the course of a 40-minute conversation with him, they get him to do the alcohol breathalyzer test. He is over the limit.
And
let me just say, I watched the video, half the video last night of this confrontation between the officers and Rayshard Brooks.
Correct.
Rayshard Brooks is hammered.
Yeah.
He is so drunk out of his mind. He doesn't even know where he is. The officer is asking plain, simple questions. He can't answer them. He gets confused. So they're dealing with a drunk man who's repeatedly telling them lies about he wasn't in his right mind. So anyway,
but they go to put the cuffs on him.
Yeah.
And he struggles, and he's a big, strong guy. And he basically throws these two smaller police officers off. And in the course of things, Mr. Brooks grabs one of the tasers from the police officers and begins to run from the scene. And at one point, a few seconds later, Mr. Brooks turns around with the taser in his hand and shoots it at Officer Garrett Rolfe.
While they're running.
And Rolfe returns fire from his service weapon, hits Mr. Brooks twice, and Mr. Brooks sadly passes away at the scene.
Yeah, they spend a lot of time trying to reason with this guy.
Over 40 minutes.
In fact, I thought it was excess. Mm. I thought, why, a cop's going to do this with everybody they meet?
Right.
Talk to them for 40 minutes about how the family is?
Right.
I mean, it just it seemed like they were going overboard because he was a black male.
Right. Yep.
To me. Go ahead.
Yesterday, the district attorney, Paul Howard, filing 11 charges, including felony murder, against Officer Rolfe. Now, I watched the reaction yesterday after that news conference, Judge Napolitano on Fox, others all saying this is so far over what should have been done. This is not the same as the case in Minneapolis in any way, shape, or form.
Two different planets.
Right.
Totally different cases.
Yeah.
But this Paul Howard, this district attorney, and here's another ingredient to this story. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation, the GBI, is still investigating this incident. This often happens in a police shooting. The GBI, in this case, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, is still investigating. Mr. Howard didn't even bother to tell the GBI that he was going to hold a news conference yesterday to announce these charges. They're saying, what's going on here? We have not finished the investigation yet. The grand jury's not going to meet until October. And yet Paul Howard goes out there and announces all of these charges.
The DA, you're talking about?
The DA.
Is it elected or appointed?
It's elected. Elected. He's in the middle of election right now.
Well, there you go. There you go. Walker, this police officer, in my view, should not be charged in any way with a crime.
Yeah.
But they've gone beyond manslaughter. They've gone for like murder two or whatever.
Felony murder.
Was that contain the death sentence?
Yes.
So this is what happens when you allow politics and the cultural trends that sway one way or the other, depending on what day of the week it is, to get into your decision making as a prosecutor. So this is clearly politically motivated, meaning he wants this DA is apparently trying to satisfy the mob.
He wants this officer in the electric chair.
That's right. Yeah. And he's going along with what the mayor's rhetoric about, we're about to charge this. This
the mayor fired the officer the night of.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Now, I want to play you a little bit of what Paul Howard, the DA, said yesterday. Keeping in mind what most people have seen in the video now, the big struggle when the police officers tried to put the
handcuffs on. It's not a struggle, Fred. It's a fight.
It's a fight.
It's a fist fight in
Brooks,
the parking lot.
Brooks, the man, initiated a fist fight with the two cops.
And
so
then ran
I just
with
wanted
it.
To make sure yeah, a struggle and, sounds like they're both equal and they're trying to tussle.
Yeah.
Now listen what Howard told at this news. Listen to what he said at the news conference yesterday. He said Rayshard Brooks was never a threat. Cut number five.
Mr. Brooks, on the night of this incident, was calm. He was cordial and really displayed a cooperative nature. We concluded and considered it as one of our important considerations that Mr. Brooks never presented himself as a threat.
You're a liar.
Yeah, that's denying all the visual evidence.
That's unbelievable. Is that all he said right there? Are we missing any context?
No. And I listened to the whole news conference yesterday. He barely touched on the fact about the fight that Brooks gave to the police officer.
I'm stunned by that.
Me too.
The only thing I can think of is all he's talking about is the first part of the interaction between the police and Brooks. And I didn't see, if it was 40 minutes, I didn't watch 40 minutes of it. But he looked like he was cooperating at that point. But the minute the handcuffs come out, he starts, like you said, it's on.
Yeah. He hit one of the cops in the face.
Yeah, yeah. I'm stunned by that.
Yeah. I said the other day, I wasn't on the air, but there's multiple decisions that the suspect here, who's obviously intoxicated, had to make to get himself in the position he did. Number one, well, you got the original DUI, driving while intoxicated, DWI, and then you have the officers come, and after 40 minutes of trying to calm him down, they handcuff him. Then he starts fighting the officers. Not only does he try to beat up the officers, but then he takes their taser, which is another decision he had to make.
And all the while they're telling him, quit fighting.
Yeah. Then he takes their taser and runs from them. And then he turns around and shoots the taser at the officer. So in any scenario, by any book of law enforcement, that was a justified shooting.
And you know what this district attorney said too? He said, well, they should have known, the officer should have known he had already fired, there had already been two shots fired with a taser, and that's all they can fire. He should have known that. And I'm thinking to myself, did you just watch? First of all, I saw something come out of that taser gun, I thought.
Yeah.
But anyway.
It looked like it flashed.
It flashed, anyway. But my point is, this DA acts like you can hit pause.
Right.
You can hit, like we're watching a TV show going, and the cop can go, and the cop's trying to save his life. They're being beat up by this guy. Don't know what he's going to do next. Grabs her taser. And this DA, they act like they can say, like he's processing, you know, I don't think he has any shots left in my taser.
It's each police officer has a taser. Now, did I dream this or did I read that the officer who shot him, shot Brooks, he still had his taser?
Correct.
That the taser was taken from the other officer.
Yeah.
So the assumption that the DA is making, Paul Howard, is that the shooting police officer knew that what he was turning around with and pointing at him was his partner's taser. I mean, how does that police?
And how many times it had been discharged?
Well, how does he know? If he doesn't know that he took his partner's taser, for all he knew, he was turning around with a handgun.
Right.
He was turning around and pointing something at
him. This district attorney should be disbarred.
Yeah,
well,
he's facing an investigation himself from the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. Because he apparently, the allegation is, he used, Paul Howard, nonprofit funds to get another $140,000 out of the city of Atlanta to bolster his salary.
Yeah. These folks need to ride around with the officers for a day or two and get in a struggle themselves.
Yeah.
And then we'll see what they're thinking.
And then we'll critique every move they make.
Yeah,
okay?
Right.
Every move they make. And maybe you probably need to wait till you get your head bashed in, and maybe then you can defend yourself.
Yeah, maybe tased a few times.
But this DA, this is again, he's not going for manslaughter. He's wanting to put this officer in the electric chair.
Yeah.
And he also said we need to ditch the grand jury process for police officers. Did you see this?
Oh, you mean just one case?
Well, across the country.
As a philosophy, yeah.
As a philosophy. This district attorney, who we just talked about, says that when it comes to police officers, that district attorneys ought to be able to go after them without even the grand jury having to convene.
That's unconstitutional.
Yeah.
The Constitution guarantees grand jury investigations.
But this guy doesn't believe in the Constitution.
So who is he going to charge them in front of?
Nobody. He makes a decision.
Our
district attorneys would make the decision along independent of a...
That's dangerous.
Yeah. Can you imagine being a police officer on the Atlanta Police Force today? Is it any wonder the report this morning of blue flu, they're calling it, a lot of officers calling in sick, there's officers retiring like crazy down there, the police chief is gone.
That makes sense. Why would you be an officer?
Yes.
And go risk your life to save people and detain criminals if you're about to get put in jail for your life over a justified shooting. Yeah.
Get the electric chair.
Yeah, I wouldn't show up to work.
No, I'd resign.
I'd go somewhere else. I'd go to a smaller community or smaller city.
Where police are supported.
Yeah.
Yeah, if this guy can go after this officer... Based on everything I saw, I mean, they spend like half an hour, 40 minutes or so talking to this guy. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm watching this, last second, I'm going, you know, I'm not trying to be critical of the officers, but I'm going, how long are you going to talk to this fella? He's stone drunk. Everybody knows it. He can't drive. You arrest him.
Right.
Yeah. Huh? They spent 30 minutes, Dr. Phil.
Yeah.
anyway. All right, we'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
You can use this information right here.
Tim Wildman discusses life's most important issues.
So you could have a sea turtle alive out there right now that was here during the Civil War.
It's like getting a university degree.
kind of.
Tell the world.
Here's the question, Ed. How wide is the wingspan of the world's largest roach species?
Listen to the Trivia Friday edition of Today's Issues, Friday mornings at 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Trivia Friday.
And my father, your great-grandfather, fought in World War II.
Really?
He was a gunner on the big ship out in the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Your great-grandmother did her part, too.
Was she on a ship?
Oh, no. She stayed back home. She and a lot of her friends worked really hard in a factory because the men had gone off to war.
Ooh.
And they held scrap metal drives to help in the war effort. The folks back home were heroes, too.
Here at the American Family Association, we consider you the heroes back home. As you fulfill your responsibility of caring for your family day to day, your partnership with us is crucial as we fight the enemies of freedom in America. Thank you for your commitment to the American Family Association.
Grandpa, what's a scrap metal drive?
Let's get some cookies, and I'll tell you all about it.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. I have sad news to report from your local grocery store. Aunt Jemima has been decapitated by the culture jihadist. Quaker Foods North America announced in a press release they're going to rename Aunt Jemima syrup and pancake mix. They said the origin of Aunt Jemima is based on a racial stereotype. In recent years, Quaker removed the mammy kerchief from the character, but that was not good enough for the cancel culture. Quaker says the only way to make progress toward racial equality is by creating a non-racist breakfast product. They also plan to donate $5 million to create engagement in the black community. The makers of Uncle Ben's Rice went through a similar controversy several years ago. They kept Uncle Ben, but made him a wealthy business owner. It's hard to know what's going to trigger the cancel culture next. Oreo cookies, Duke's mayonnaise, white lily flour, who knows? If nothing else, the culture jihadists are giving Americans a bad case of indigestion. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Thank you for listening to AFR. If you want to send us an email, go to comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. Tim, Ed, Walker, and Fred with you today. Jan Markell joins us now, as she does most Thursdays, from the Twin Cities in Minnesota. Jan is president and founder of Olive Tree Ministries and host of the program Understanding the Times, which airs weekends here. We'll tell you times in a minute, but airs weekends here on American Family Radio. Good morning, Jan.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Fred, you wanted to...
Yeah, Jan, we know you live outside of the city of Minneapolis, right, but you've lived in the area for years and years. I just have a question. We all have seen what has been happening in Minneapolis, including the city council there, who now wants to not defund the police department, but to get rid of the police department altogether. And the rest of America, I think, is shaking their heads and saying, what's going on in that city? But wanted to hear from you. I mean, this just didn't happen yesterday. These are all elected officials. What has been going on in Minneapolis to lead up to this insanity?
Yeah, good question. Certainly 100 years of liberal run institutions, from mayors to governors to congressmen and senators. And liberalism has consequences, and I think we're seeing it here. If you were to see various sections of both Minneapolis and St. Paul, they look like Aleppo, Syria. They are destroyed. They are completely wiped out. And some of these are minority-owned, not all of them, but some are. You know, the Bible talks all the way back in 2 Thessalonians 2 about the mystery of lawlessness already at work. So lawlessness started 2,000 years ago, but then the Bible says it will increase, and particularly in the last days, which I think we're in. And so I think we should be expecting some of this. But it's tragic, gentlemen, to see the depravity of mankind, how little they care about the value of anything, including human life. And yes, the George Floyd incident was took place here in that general region where all the burning, looting, and destroying took place. That's where the police officer really messed up big time. This is now, Memorial Day, end of May. But, you know, terrible ordeal, but worthy of this kind of outrage, which now turns the Twin Cities into Bosnia of the 1990s.
Jan, I wanted to ask you, you know, as someone as in, you've lived in Twin Cities area for what, a few decades?
Yeah, all my life.
Okay, all your life, so you're native of the area. By the way, I was reading a story about, like, in the 1970s or 60s, Minnesota was lauded nationally as sort of the new place to go and live and raise your family. Because it was, the economy was booming and it was
family friendly
and naturally beautiful. The winters, the 6 month winters notwithstanding.
and they are 6 months. Yeah.
We're not kidding. But I wanted to say, so, you know, the whole country looked at the heartland, right?
Yeah.
But now things have changed. But I wanted to come, and you've talked about that, but back to what you were talking about when we first came on in the Twin Cities, and in particular Minneapolis. When you see something on television and you read about it, you can't have a real appreciation necessarily for how extensive the damage was. And so you're telling me that there was like a block or two or...
More than that. And it's both Minneapolis and a section of St. Paul. It's more than a block or two. I couldn't tell you exactly.
Like buildings burnt down and looted and destroyed?
Wow. I'm telling you it's a war zone. I'm telling you it's Aleppo, Syria.
Wow.
And some of these, again, are minority-owned.
Right,
But the point is a lifetime worth of business wiped out in one night. And why? Because young people chose to riot and be in a rage and went totally out of control. And I have to throw in our Governor Waltz, who's slowly destroying our state, did not send any help in until, like, the third night. I believe he sent in National Guard by the third night, and that did help. But by then, all the destruction had happened. Yeah. So, again, liberalism has consequences.
You know, what is surprising me, I guess, is that, again, these are elected officials who have made this decision. So I have to wonder what the people who elected them are thinking. Are they now satisfied with the response, or are they saying, oh my gosh, I didn't think they would do this?
You know, I think that's a terrific question. For one thing, the district that's been so terribly harmed, by the way, it's Ilhan Omar's district in Minneapolis. I don't know that.
Oh, wow,
Paul,
okay.
Yeah, it's Ilhan Omar's district, and, you know, I think we have to ask, is she happy? But the voters, when they voted for these liberal politicians who now are saying, we don't want any police, we've got to have social workers who will go in and sing kumbaya to everybody instead of police. what are those voters thinking? Will they turn around and vote Republican and next time? I highly doubt it, but I don't know. I mean, I think that's a wonderful question, Fred. Yes. Mm.
Hey, what's coming up on your program this weekend?
Well, I've got part two of Pastor Billy Crone as we look at how man is trying to play God and is actually literally trying to create life through cloning and various other issues related to that. It's a scary topic, but remember, Jesus said in Matthew 24 that the days of Noah would return, and the days of Noah were pretty brutal and violent and filled with lots of evil thinking. And I think we're back in the days of Noah, which means the Lord Jesus is going to return any day. That's the good news.
Amen.
Hey, thanks, yeah. Jan. We appreciate it very much. Appreciate
Good
you.
Goodbye now.
On. Okay, bye-bye. That's Jan Markell joining us from the Twin Cities area in Minnesota. I didn't realize that that was Ilhan
Omar.
That's her area. A lot of Somalis live there, right?
Oh, yeah. It's in fact, there are some people that call that district Little Somalia.
Because President Obama?
You're not thinking of Dearborn, Michigan. This is in Minneapolis.
No, Minneapolis.
This is Minneapolis. Okay. Yeah.
They have a huge Somali.
I think many refugees Somalian. Have come in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't believe, I don't remember if that was President Clinton or President Obama that started that. Anyway, that was they put these walkers you're talking about. They put those Somali refugees in the Twin Cities.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, their population has grown.
Yeah, that program probably was going on even before Obama was elected.
That's what I'm thinking.
But I know for sure his...
He put more.
Yeah, his I guess it was his immigration department dropped in those into those cities like that.
Yeah. Yep. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Next story, Fred.
Seattle, another one of the hot spots. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the mayor there, a festive place.
Summer of love.
Summer of love. Well, you know, one of the organizers there is a young African-American woman, Jaden Grayson.
Organizers of what?
Of CHOP.
So the organizers of the disorganization?
Basically,
it's CHOP is the name they've given to it, the Capitol Hill organized protest.
Yes.
So they're claiming it's organized.
They're claiming that. Okay. Yes. So Amy Horowitz is a freelance journalist, documentary maker. He made it in there the other day to do an interview with Jaden Grayson, one of the organizers. I want you to listen carefully, and there's some music behind this. Don't let that distract you. Listen carefully when she is asked about what is the purpose of all of this. And Brent, that is going to be cut number one.
I'm not here to peacefully protest. I'm here to disrupt until my demands are met. You cannot rebuild until you break it all the way down. Respond to the demands of the people or prepare to be met with any means necessary. By any means necessary. It's not a slogan. It's not even a warning. I'm letting people know what comes next.
Do you think that it's so inherently biased, so inherently racist, that the criminal justice system, the courts, all of that need to be taken away?
Absolutely, without question.
And then what?
Again, you're asking a question that cannot be answered. The unraveling that happens to that system is also exactly what will fuel the black minds and the black bodies that will recreate a new world.
Do you feel like an American?
I am an African brought to America.
What?
Yep.
She's an African brought to America. Does she want to go back?
She looked young.
She is.
She wasn't from Africa.
No.
She was born here.
Yes. Right.
Now, I understand what she's...
What is she? Tell me.
What she's claiming is that she's not American.
Right. Which, my point, do you want to go back to where...
Oh, no, because they don't mess around in some of those countries in Africa.
Yeah.
You know, that you just get shot.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, she doesn't claim any identity to the U.S., to America. That's what she's saying.
Yes.
Yeah, she's definitely not.
So, that's why you can burn it all down. Right. As far as I care, you can burn it all down. I'm not even an American. That's basically.
Yeah.
Although why you'd want to construct something here if you don't claim to be American, I don't know. But
anyway. So the point of bringing this up is the driving force behind this takeover of downtown Seattle, at least a portion of it. Mm-hmm. What is it, six blocks or less now?
They've reduced it down to the three blocks.
It is to make the point that she just made.
Yeah, she wants to tear apart the American judicial system, the economy, and rebuild it again. But she doesn't know what that's going to look like. Now, she said that in that clip.
Yeah,
I don't know what that's going to look like. But if you tear down the system, she says, that'll allow the black minds to recreate something new, quoting her.
Well, that's not atypical for revolutions, as I said earlier in the week. Typically, revolutions start off with different groups joining together because they have a common enemy. In the French Revolution, it was the monarchy. And then what happens afterwards is then you got to decide what you're going to build. This is what this woman was saying. Well, we don't know what we're going to build yet. Well, once you start that process, everybody has a different idea of what should be built.
And who's in charge.
And that's why revolutions tend to eat their young.
Yeah.
Their children is the oldest.
I got to tell you, I think this young lady, how old is she? What is she? What's her
She's
name?
Very young. Her name is Jaden Grayson.
She was threatening. She was saying, by any means necessary.
Oh, you know, this is the story of the left. They skip all the due process, all the procedures that our system has in place for people to have power. They skip it all. Mm-hmm. They use courts. They use mobs. And they use executive decisions. They hardly ever are they talking about ballot initiatives anymore.
That's because at heart, this is a Marxist movement, and Marxism is a dictatorship.
Right.
That's why they tear down statues and throw them in the river.
Yeah, instead of having a city council vote.
They don't go through the city council to say, you know, how can we do this? We object to this. And how can do this in an orderly fashion? No, they just mob rules.
Yeah, and they don't want to. Let's talk about it. I'm going to try to convince you to come to my side.
No.
So then we can vote on it. No, they're not about
that. It's fascist.
That's
right. Really. It's I'm right.
Can you imagine for a moment if a conservative group was trying to bring about reform and they decided to set up in the 6-block section of San Francisco?
Right.
And wear MAGA hats.
Can you imagine
the
media coverage?
That would be labeled an insurrection.
Yes.
They would deploy the military to arrest them.
Yes.
Because that's what it is.
Yes.
It's an insurrection.
When you want to uproot a constitutional system that was set up by the people to protect the people, when you want to completely just throw that in the trash, that is anarchy.
Well, yes. And the who should the businesses in this area, really all businesses in the state of Washington should probably file a
joint suit,
class action suit against the state of Washington and the mayor of Seattle for not protecting their businesses. Now,
right.
I'm not saying a business in Tacoma is affected by this necessarily, but I'm saying sometimes you have to do a class action suit because you're looking out for something. You're looking out to protect yourself against this happening to you, right? Because it's happening down the street or down the highway. And but a couple things here, and then we got an interview. I think the governor of the state of Washington agrees with the protesters, agrees with the people who've taken over philosophically.
Right.
And he may not be as radical as this woman, but they're ideologically linked, all right? Mayor is the same way. The mayor agrees with the revolution. And the citizens of Washington agree with the revolution. That's why they don't care.
Right.
That the citizens of Washington, now I'm making an observation from 3,000 miles away, but that's all I can come up with as to reason this is tolerated.
There's one exception.
All right.
The mayor of Olympia.
Just
down the road from Seattle.
Yeah.
First of all, she was all in on the Black Lives Matter protests in Seattle, but something happened. Somebody vandalized her house.
Yeah.
The mayor of Olympia. Now she's calling it domestic terrorism.
That comes from a place of privilege.
Absolutely.
They think you have a right to not be vandalized?
That's right.
Oh, wow.
I agree with you, Tim.
You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Brad Dacus joins us now, president of Pacific Justice Institute, and they are a constitutional law firm. And good morning, Brad. How are you, sir?
Doing just great. Thank you.
Hey, Brad, tell our listeners about your organization.
Oh, certainly. We at Pacific Justice Institute are a nonprofit, 501c3 legal defense organization specializing in defending religious freedom, parents' rights, the sanctity of human life. And we're sort of unique, actually, because we don't just take on the high-profile cases. We work hard to make sure that No one is left on the side of the road, that everyone gets the help that they need when it comes to these fundamental civil liberties. We have more offices than any organization of our kind, 10 offices in 6 states, helping people all across the United States completely without charge.
Brad, Fred Jackson here, and you sent out a press release about 48 hours ago. It has to do with a church, New Harvest Christian Fellowship in Salinas, California. Fairly small community. Is it south of San Francisco? Am I right on that?
Yes, that's right. It's a small community south of San Francisco, south of San Jose.
Okay.
And it's really outrageous what's happened, because this little church, Harvest Church, has been, Harvest Christian Church has been in the downtown area there for a good long while. They've been out of space, renting a space, and they wanted a building right across the street, the old downtown Salinas. Went on the market. It was larger. They didn't have room for Sunday school, and they really needed it. So they went and bought this building across the street. Well, Salinas said, "Oh no, we don't want a church there. We this isn't going to be good for tourism." Well, they already had a church there. This was the church. They're just moving across the street. They said, "No, we want fun things, entertaining things." Even though there's businesses there in the downtown, there's a post office in the downtown. Bottom line, they just didn't want a church, and they didn't feel a church was essential for their plans. So we at Pacific Justice Institute filed a lawsuit on their behalf and argued it in federal court.
I tell you, I was shocked by what the U.S. Magistrate Judge Susan Van Coolen had to say. She said, according to press release, the court determined that churches generate limited interest, do not draw tourists, and therefore detract from the city's goals of vibrancy. The court further believed a city is justified in promoting a street of fun, that fun, F-U-N, that excludes churches at the same time it allows even larger concert and entertainment venues. So it's the judge saying that the church had to up the worship service and make it a fun thing in order to qualify to be living, have a building downtown?
Yeah, that's the language. It's just full of blatant bigotry and a hostile bias towards Christians and churches. There's no compelling state interest for them to have their subjective fun standards. The reality is churches and ministries, and we at Pacific Justice Institute have defended churches on land use zoning issues numerous times, but this is the most outrageous we've ever seen. Even seen pretextually, we've seen, better justifications and standards to justify this. So we at Pacific Justice are trying to work hard to go to bat for them, and we're going to appeal this decision. We're somewhat optimistic that we're going to be successful in taking this case to the night on appeal. And then if that's the case, to the U.S. Supreme Court, even though the Supreme Court has given us some unfortunate, very disappointing decisions, like Neil Gorsuch, they have shown their loyalty to religious freedom. And I do believe we have a solid core still on the Supreme Court that in the end will make sure that this is ruled correctly if the Ninth Circuit doesn't.
Well, this is an outrageous decision for a federal court to say that churches do not contribute to a vibrant and fun atmosphere and therefore may be excluded from Salinas' downtown area. That is a recipe for all cities in California, if they follow the reasoning of this ruling, all cities to kick churches out of their downtown areas and push them to the fringes, and who knows where that stops. So I'm guessing that's why you're going to appeal it to the Ninth Circuit. That's a pretty liberal circuit. Traditionally, do you have hopes that even they will see the wrongness of this ruling?
Actually, we do. And the reason we're optimistic to some degree is thanks to President Donald Trump. His appointments to not only the Supreme Court, but his appointments to the Ninth Circuit have been incredible. No president in my lifetime has appointed more justices that defend religious freedom and the First Amendment and respect our Constitution than the appointments of President Donald Trump. and we've been a third of the justices on the Ninth Circuit, a third, have already been replaced by President Donald Trump. So that's very optimistic. You know, the panel is random. We may end up with three justices that are, you know, have a different perspective of the Constitution and believe in judicial activism and hostility towards people of faith. Those justices are out there. There's way too many of them still on the different circuits. But we have a good chance that it'll be a good mix and some reasonable, level-headed justices that have not breached the public trust. So we're hopeful that we'll have that. If not, we're somewhat optimistic that the Supreme Court will see through this for what it is. You can't get more arbitrary than a city government saying that a church is not fun enough as the reason to allow them to be able to worship and have their religious freedom protected. It is just absurd. Yeah. And unsubstantiated, and even very contradictory, even by their own standards, when you look at the post office and some other businesses that are far from fun or entertaining there in the downtown area.
All right, Brad, what's your website?
Yes, if people like to keep up with this case, we have 47 other cases in active litigation. If they need help, or they'd like to get our legal insight, you should go to our website, pji.org. It's P for Pacific, J for Justice, I for Institute, .org, pji.org. We're here to serve completely without charge anyone in your audience needing help or their church at any time.
40, how many cases, active cases?
We are right now have more than 47 cases in active litigation. That's not even counting the ones we recently filed against governors in Washington State, Oregon, California, and other places to challenge the shutting down of churches. We've got real important litigation there that I think is going to have a big impact in the long run for religious freedom.
Okay. Brad, yeah. I got a free AFR t-shirt. If you can tell me what case number 39 is about.
39 is all about... No, I'm just teasing.
She just made something up.
Yeah, I wouldn't have known. All right, Brad.
Yeah.
God bless you, brother. Thanks for your work.
And keep up your great work. I'm a big fan of you guys at AFA, so thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That sounds like a Babylon Bee story right there. Where was this town?
Salinas.
Salinas where?
California.
Salinas, and they said you can't have your church down. You can't participate.
And that's what the judge said too.
Yeah.
The church doesn't fit the fun environment that they're driving for in downtown Salinas.
You know, that's in the First Amendment.
Yes, it is.
It's got a lot. Right to fun. It's an oft not quoted. The right to churches must, the freedom of religion must include fun.
Well, I've heard that from teenagers before.
And you know, it's in the First Amendment.
I have a right to fun.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this has revealed how many Democrat elected officials, they selectively apply the Constitution depending on if they agree with the persons involved, if you will.
Right.
So if they don't really like Christians and the conservatives and the churches, then they ignore the First Amendment. But if it's the protesters who are mostly Democrats or liberals, they're going to vote for them, then they're fine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Listen, and now I'm being serious about this. These far left, quote, progressives, they are secular humanists.
Yes.
They hate our guts. And they're going to use anything, any way they can.
By any means necessary.
No matter what the Constitution says.
That's exactly
right. They hate our guts. Because we follow the God of the Bible.
Amen.
Yeah.
And they ultimately hate God. Now,
that's the reason.
We need to remember, pray for them if you have secular progressives, if you have secular humanists in your neighborhood. First, call the good exterminator.
Yeah.
But then pray for them because they might turn back to God. But it is true, they hate God.
And invite them to something fun.
Yes.
Right?
Church service.
Okay, we'll be back momentarily.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.